seal out drafts, dust, and moisture with MD Brand Weather Stripping from Menards. A well-sealed home is more comfortable and energy efficient. We have the largest selection of in-stock weather stripping with over 100 products available to take home and start lowering your energy bills today. Save big money on weather stripping right now at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends, and welcome if you're new. Sorry I was gone for a few days, just been going through some personal stuff and needed some time to recharge and get back in the groove for you. Today, we're going to be sharing some creepy and downright strange state park and camping horror stories sent in by viewers just like you. As always, if you have a story that you would like to share in a future episode, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. Now, be sure to like this video, subscribe if you're new, and get ready for creepy and downright strange state park and camping horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. Paranormal Experience in Fort Robinson State Park by WonderBread421. For those unaware, Fort Robinson State Park is in the northwest corner of Nebraska, in the Chadron area, and is a stone's throw away from Toadstool National Park. It is the site of several bloody conflicts between the U.S. forces and Native Americans. It is the location where Chief Crazy Horse was murdered. My family has gone there every year for 30-plus years for a family reunion, and each has their own stories of the location's paranormal activity. These are my stories. When I was between 7 and 10 years old, I don't remember exactly how old I was, but my family thought it would be fun to take me snipe hunting. The whole family was in on the joke, and one even took me nearby to this natural museum to get the book on birds. Anyway, night falls and we make our way down to an area of very tall grass near Soldier's Creek with my bag and stick and string tied to it. Now, my mother wouldn't let my brother just leave me out there all alone. I was glad she didn't, so he and his friend stayed with me. As time passed, I heard crinkles in the bag, and I pulled my stick. We clamped the bag shut and began to return to the cabin where we were staying. We went along the dirt road used for maintenance and some of the park's attractions. We stopped and looked at the right side of the road, where we thought we saw one of the adults waiting for us. It had a perfect outline of a head and shoulders, but looked like it was made out of gray mist. It was dark, so we just thought that it was hard to make out their features. So we called out to them, saying, "Hey, we're heading back to the cabin." It didn't move, though. So we sat there for a moment trying to get their attention, trying to get them to come to us. When I finally said, "Oh, that's probably a no trespassing sign or something. It's probably not actually a human being." My brother's friend turned on his flashlight, shined it down the road a little bit, and said, "No, that sign's over there." In the beam of his flashlight was the sign. He shined his light on the figure, which was just a gray mass. We booked it back to the cabin, and when we got there, we told everyone what we saw. There was a mixture of them believing us and some dismissing it as our imagination. Fast forward to me now, at 12 or 13. I had a Verizon NV3 phone at the time that had the recall because its battery was slightly too minor, and if you shook it just right, the phone would shut off because the battery disconnected. Anyway, my cousin and I were messing around on the third floor of the house we were staying in. It would have been the maid quarter while it was first in operation, and I was recording us doing some stuff on my phone. It was acting weird, as if the video had substantial black spots. It skipped around like it was lagging, and later that day, we recorded something outside, and everything was absolutely standard. Overall, it was a very paranormally active location that has unfortunately never been visited by ghost hunter type people that I know about. I'd love to see a show go there one day, because I'm sure they would get some legitimate evidence. Creepy Camping in Coquille State Park by Anonymous. I recently went camping with my family at Coquille State Park in Kauai. We stayed in a cabin on state property because my uncle does something with wildlife, couldn't really tell you what, I never really asked him. It's on top of a hill in front of a camp. I think the camp is called Sloget or Sloget. Upon walking inside, I instantly felt a chill when I wandered into this room. Being the brave person I am, I decided to face my fear and sleep in said room. Throughout the night, there were times, the best way I can describe it, that it felt like someone else was not only in the room with you, but walking through you. Everyone else suddenly experienced random goosebumps, being very cold, lights flickering, doors opening, etc. When it was finally time to wrap up the night and everyone headed to their room, it felt normal in my bed. No cold feelings, no eyes on me, just a comfy bed, and I fell asleep just fine. But sometime around 1 or 2 a.m., I woke up to what sounded like a cat's cry. I didn't think anything of it because all the stray cats on Kauai, so I closed my eyes. That's when it happened. I first noticed the feeling that someone was almost inside me. The energy was so vital that it was hitting me in waves. My ears felt a tremendous amount of pressure, to the point that I could only hear my heartbeat. The waves that I thought sounded like wah wah wah, each causing more pressure on my ears. I faced the wall, eyes shut tight, hoping it would leave me alone. Then my sleeping bag got pulled tight across my neck, and the watching me feeling changed to a get the hell out feeling. I tried to yell stop when my sleeping bag moved, but nothing came out. Slowly the pressure was lifted, and the feeling went away. Moments later I heard my little sister, who was sleeping in the queen-size bed in the other side of the room, whimpering and tossing around. I laid there for hours, trying to go back to sleep but never really could. This is an experience in the Coquille State Park that I don't think I'll ever forget. There are some strange things that happen out there. A Strange Camping Trip by Takea. This story took place in June 2022. My friends and I decided to go on a camping trip. I decided to bring my dog Chief, my 150-pound Newfoundland. Before continuing, Chief is unlike most Newfies. He was born and lived in the bush for the first year of his life and developed good hunting skills. I found him caught in my trap lines 9 months ago. I'll skip over a bunch of stuff to cut to the chase. We bonded very strongly during this recovery, and I learned that my newfound Newfoundland could hold his own in a scrap. One afternoon, when I got home from work, I found two dead coyotes in the backyard. He is now a healthy, solid farm and guard dog. Anyway, one day my friends, who we will call Jimmy and Alfie, decided to go on a week-long camping trip in northern British Columbia. They invited me, and we packed our bags, took a week off work, jumped in my F-150, and headed north. When we reached the woods, we put our packs on. I loaded Chief with his little buggy. I built it so he could pull his weight during the summer and fall camping trips instead of only having a sled in winter. That carried our tent, sleeping bags, and the light stuff, nothing heavy. We had covered 5 miles by the time we set up camp. Once we were set up for the night, I took Chief's harness off so he could run around and, you know, do his thing out in the woods. When it was time to eat, I gave Chief his food and we ate. Jimmy, Alfie, and I sat beside each other and ate pork. Chief was lying beside the fire, his head on his paws, looking at us. He suddenly got to his feet and let out the loudest, most resounding bark I had ever heard, which was only increased by the echo of the bush. When we turned, we saw some branches shaking, like something was running away. We decided it was just a raccoon, or at the worst, a bear. Later that night, we were just chatting. Chief had gone off to pee or something when we heard something coming to life to the left of us. I figured it was Chief when suddenly I saw a flash of black fur out of the corner of my eye on the right, and then Chief went barreling between us and the campfire. I turned my head in time to see a man who would have been around 6'1 with a piece of firewood get to his feet and raise it above his head to hit him. Still, before he could land a blow, Chief jumped up and landed dead square on his chest, pushing him to the ground. When he landed, Chief was already off when the man realized he was bit. This man whirled around onto his hands and knees and was beginning to make his way to the piece of wood he had dropped, but was staring down the wrinkled up muzzle of Chief. He was standing over the timber and growling. I can only really believe this because I witnessed it myself. He growled before delivering a very deadly rush for the throat when he was hunting. I ran over to hold Chief while Jimmy and Alfie helped the man. We searched for him and found stuff that made us realize he didn't come for the marshmallows. We saw this man's neck wound and decided to cut our trip short and turn him in. And yes, we brought him up for 3 days to report him. This guy told the police that God told him to sneak into our tent and slit our throats to sacrifice us. The man needed 3 surgeries before he could be released from the hospital. I am forever grateful to my dog. Without him, I have no idea where we would be. But damn, be safe out there in the woods.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the fall of 2016, a friend and I decided to go hiking late in the afternoon in a densely wooded wilderness area in a state park in the mountains not far from Fayetteville, Arkansas. My friend Rick was close to 60 at the time and recovering from a triple bypass he had undergone around 16 months earlier. We had been hiking this and other trails for about a year following his operation to strengthen his cardiovascular health. That day, a weekday, I hiked with a bottle of water, my wallet, and my keys, but nothing else. Nothing to protect myself. The trail we picked was popular, and usually had a lot of people hiking on the weekend. We have hiked this spot dozens of times before. We were both comfortable with the hike and had never had any problems on the path, or any other for that matter. While Rick is older, and at the time a little feebler after his health problems, I was in my mid-40s, well over 6 feet tall, and in fairly good shape, so was not very worried about our safety. The trail we were on is in a state park adjacent to federal parkland. It is an outdoor enthusiast's dream. Most of our trek that day was completely uneventful. We just enjoyed the autumn leaves and chatted casually as the sun dropped lower in the evening sky. We had seen nobody else that day, which was probably to be expected given that we chose to hike late afternoon on a weekday. We had completed about 4 miles of the 6 mile loop, and up to that point, it was an uneventful time as any other. On our way back to the car, and about 2 miles away from the parking area, we spotted someone. We saw them through an opening in the trees. I saw a young woman, probably a college student on the trail ahead of us, moving in our direction. At first, I paid her extraordinarily little attention. As the distance between us disappeared, that changed. I did not know her, so I could have been mistaken, but there was something about her posture and expression that just seemed off. As she got closer, it struck me that she had a semi-panicked look on her face as she was moving quite quickly. She was in athletic gear, so maybe she was just booking it for some cardio. She occasionally turned her head and stared over her shoulder, though. I followed her eyes and eventually noted another human about 50 yards behind her walking up the path through the trees. This second woman was not wearing any hiking gear. In fact, her clothing struck me as totally inappropriate. It was a warm afternoon, and we were well inside a wooded state park, a couple of miles from any homes, but she was wearing semi-formal, office casual attire and a light jacket. I thought the clothes must have been secondhand because they were tattered, ill-fitting, and did not look washed at all. She was fit and athletic-looking, who could not have been more than 25 or 30 years of age. It was so bizarre. The clothes were wrong for the trail, and they were wrong for someone her age. Everything was off about her. Her shoes struck me as odd, being even more peculiar. When she got closer, I noticed she was wearing scuffed leather flats, casual shoes with no ankle support. I found it completely odd because you do not just see people on trails dressed as she was, and you never see them wearing shoes like that. My hiking partner, Rick, had not noticed anything apparently, as he was completely involved in the conversation and just kept on talking. The second woman briefly glanced up and made eye contact as she neared us. The alarm bells went off in my head like no other. There was something in her eyes that made me feel uncomfortable. I do not know what she was thinking, if I am being honest, but I swear, she had contempt in her face. Part of me wondered if I had offended her by staring, so I diverted my eyes and kept walking. I tried to tell myself that maybe she was homeless, maybe she was just wearing the only thing she had, and I was just being rude. But the warning bells were still going off in my head like sirens. I am not a paranoid person at all, so having a sixth sense go off in my head left me very unsettled. I have fantastic peripheral vision, so I turned my face toward Rick and acted like I was listening to him, but I was watching the creepy woman out of the corner of my eye. The moment we passed, she spun her head around to study us. She slowed her pace a bit. My internal alarms grew louder. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw her come to a stop and drop her face toward the ground. Her body half turned on the trail. It was very odd behavior. Rick and I kept walking for about 50 yards further. We made it around a bend in the path, and I looked back at the woman before the trees obscured her from view. She was just standing there. Her face was down, but she was staring a hole through us in the corner of her eyes. That was the first time I realized that I could not see her hands. One was inside her jacket pocket, and the other was hidden from my view on the other side of her body. It creeped me the hell out. The hair on the back of my neck stood up. For half a mile, I did not see her again and had begun to wonder whether the first woman, the co-ed, had felt danger as well. Clearly she had, I thought, and that is why she practically was running through the woods at dusk. It also struck me that the creepy woman had stopped and studied Rick and me, like she was deciding whom to follow. We were not moving as fast. We were walking as quickly as Rick could manage, and he was clearly feebler than the co-ed. Those thoughts amped up my senses, and I still felt uneasy, so I periodically checked behind us. At certain points through the woods, I could see more than 100 yards, and I never saw anything. I began to worry about the co-ed. My hair stood up for a second time as I felt the strangest sensation of being watched. Again, thinking I was paranoid and half mocking myself for being afraid of the creepy woman, I turned my head around to assure myself she was not there. I was wrong. She was there, following with her head down and moving briskly about 100 yards behind us. But with her hands hidden, I turned my head back to the trail in front of us and we kept walking, still trying to convince myself that there was nothing out of the ordinary happening, that I was just being rude because she was dressed like a homeless woman. About 200 yards further along the path, I turned my head back to Rick and my heart raced a bit. She closed the distance by half or more. Each time we would walk around the bend and the woods obscured her location, she would emerge much closer to us on the next opening. I told myself that I was just being paranoid, but nevertheless, trying to get Rick to pick up his speed just a little bit. By this time, he was clearly aware that we are being followed, and he was uncomfortable as well, though to his credit, he did keep talking. With a half mile to go before we reached the parking area, I turned my head once again, and she was just 10 feet behind us. I had not seen or heard her get that close, and it freaked me out. I literally jumped out of my skin. One of her hands was in her pocket, and the other was behind her back. I got the distinct feeling that she had a weapon of some kind, and that she had no fear of me even though I was considerably taller, albeit several years older. There was no mistaking her demeanor. She meant to do us harm, or at the very least she intended to intimidate us. I weaved my car keys between my knuckles in my right hand. I handed my water bottle to Rick, and made an obvious fist with my hand. With a half mile left in her hike, I thought to myself, if this is nothing, she'll pass us and move on, as clearly she is moving a lot faster than we were. I was accustomed to people overtaking us when I walked with Rick, but she did not pass, and never acted like she knew we were there, which was the creepiest part. I kept my head turned toward her as I walked and tried to get her to make eye contact, but she did not look me in the eyes at first. She kept acting like neither Rick nor I were there on the path, just a few feet ahead of her. She had slowed to follow closely behind. I was completely unnerved, and that made me angry. I wanted her to see how upset I was, and to convey with a look that messing with me was a mistake. When she finally did make eye contact with me, I glared with clenched fist. There was an instant where I could not read her expression. She was simply blank, but as she studied my face, she appeared to be simultaneously agitated and a little less confident. I was conveying one thing in the look of my face: back the hell off. And at this point, I did not care if it appeared rude. She apparently thought better of whatever she was doing and slowed her pace so that the distance between us began to grow to about 20 feet. But she was tense, and kept whatever she had in her hand very closely hidden behind her back. I never saw her hands this entire time. I know she had to have some kind of weapon, and I believe that she meant to do us harm, but I also know she recognized that I was ready to fight. I was mentally preparing to charge at her if I saw a gun or a knife, as I knew Rick could not outrun her. I thought to myself, I might just surprise her. I also realized that I needed to have her in front of us. A few hundred feet further, about a quarter mile away from where we were parked, she's still stalking us, and I had had enough. I was in equal measures afraid and furious. I told Rick that we were going to stop and let her pass, loud enough for her to hear it. Just as I was getting ready to stop on the trail and make her walk in front of us, she veered into a small clearing, plowing through the waist-high brush, crossed a ditch, and scurried through a tree line of trees to a road that ran through the woods and between the main road and the parking area. I kept my eyes on her the whole time. She had a car. It was parked alongside this little service road, partially hidden by shrubs, not in the parking lot. The last time we made eye contact, just before she climbed into her car, it was clear from her expression on her face she was incredibly angry. I glared at her, expressing my own anger, but kept walking. When her car started and she drove away, Rick got quiet before asking me, "What in the hell was she doing? Did she have a gun?" I told him I did not know. I never saw a weapon. We walked back to our car without saying another word. Once the engine was on and the doors were shut, we chatted a bit more about this weird situation and decided to call the authorities and report the incident, just to make sure that they have it on record and to maybe have them check on the poor co-ed who had passed us first. To this day, I have no idea what that creepy woman was doing and what she was planning on doing to us. Maybe she was going to rob us, harm us, scare us, I have no idea. I am just thankful she decided better of it. I have hiked that trail more than 50 times since then, and I've never seen her again. Hi, Swamp Dweller. My name is Seth. During the summer of 2020, I moved to the South Georgia area near the Okefenokee Swamp. There are tons of alligators and snakes everywhere here. In case some people may or may not know, it is the biggest swamp in the United States as it corners the southeast part of the state and into northern Florida. Anyways, my house sits on the edge of a canal, which is about 10 miles from a state park. Nothing but deep forests surround the four-bedroom house. Plenty of late nights I can hear gators hissing from the water as I sit on my back porch. The porch sits alone on the upper floor right above the main level porch. It has no stairs, so I'm at a safe distance away from any of the wild predators that could be lurking around, like black bears, coyotes, hogs, and from what I hear, the occasional jaguar. One night I am on the porch having my second beer, and I hear something from an echo. It was coming from the water and it sounded like a loud wailing creature. I thought to myself, this is fresh water. What on earth would be in the swamp that could sound like that? Is there something in the swamp that I don't know about? The creature got closer to my house as it made its final sound. That is when things got extremely quiet. All the crickets and frogs came to an abrupt stop. That is when I tensed up. On my table was my spotlight, so I grabbed it and shined the light directly into the water where I had been feeling the creature would be. I saw something tremendous, but I could not see the creature. I saw a huge wake of water rising as I stood up in fear. My chair falls off its legs. Whatever this thing is, sure was not an alligator. Not even a full-length 12 to 14-foot adult could do what I was witnessing right now. I've hunted plenty of gators with friends during the season. I've never heard of anything else that lives in the swamp that could be like this. I get more frightened the more I think about it. About a week later, my buddy asked me if I wanted to go hunt more gators. It was a tough decision for me, but as much as I love gator hunting, I finally said yes and asked my wife if it was fine. She gave me the approval since she did not have any plans for the day, and we headed out into his boat. We began the day by checking the crawfish traps that he had set up as I started to load the rifle and put all 40 gator tags in the box. I had told him about last night and asked if he had ever heard anything like this or had some sort of experience similar. He stopped the boat before we got to the fifth trap, and he said that he had lost a relative to this so-called creature about 4 years ago on a late night that nobody has ever been able to explain and nobody has ever seen this thing. But the sound that it makes is the same thing that I heard that night. The way he explained it almost gave me chills. I felt so bad for his loss though, as he started to tear up a little, and I told him how sorry I was. He never spoke about it after that, but we had a great day catching over 100 pounds of crawfish and 13 gators from 9 to 11 feet long. It was quite an impressive day for us. Later that night, he wanted to go back to the water to catch some frogs. This is when it happened again. I went with him with my 30-aught rifle, just in case. I could not let him go alone, but at the same time, I was fearing for our lives as we got into the boat and the water. The creature was at a greater distance this time from its echo, so we tried to hurry and catch up to the 20 frogs that we needed to meet our goal. We could hear the creature getting closer and making huge splashes yet again. We did not waste any more time to stop and hurriedly caught the last few frogs. As soon as we caught the last one, we turned the boat engine on and scrambled out of the area. He gave me half of all the catches he had. Our family and friends had a feast the next day. We decided to never go catching frogs that late ever again. We still don't know what this creature was, but it still haunts us to this day. This story takes place in May of 2016. I went camping with my boyfriend at the time, who we will call D, and another couple who I was friends with. We decided to drive down to a place called Point Lookout State Park, located at the southernmost point of Maryland. It was a rather large campground with three separate loops of campsites. Two loops were in a more wooded area, while the loop we stayed at was directly on the water. Our loop was also less crowded, with only one other tent set up. I should mention that Point Lookout State Park is a very flat piece of land on the Chesapeake Bay, much of the place being marshland. There is also a neat little lighthouse that's very old that's not too far from the loop as well, probably no more than a short drive. Anyway, I did not look up anything about the area before going. I was simply happy to have a little vacation, as I was going through a hard time in my life at the time. We pitched camp at the most perfect spot on the loop. It was directly on the water, but far enough from the road to not be seen by other people. With a curtain of tall grass guarding the view from anyone else, basically, the perfect spot to drink and smoke weed without being bothered. This was my first time camping, and Dee was not very into it either, so we pitched a pathetic and loose tent, but it did not matter since we were barely in the tent except to sleep. We walked around and checked out the area for a bit, walking through the camping loops in along the shoreline. The area was very nice. The whole area just gave me a slightly weird feeling though. I cannot quite describe it. Like a solemn silence that also felt very heavy, if that makes sense. At one point, I broke off from the group to use the bathroom facility. As I was walking along the trail, I swear I see a large, I mean huge, terrapin tortoise walking across the path directly in front of me. As it walked, it kind of made eye contact with me and did not break it. It was not terribly strange, but again, it just felt off. When I came out of the bathroom, the tortoise was gone, even though it was walking extremely slow. The first night was rather uneventful, besides the extreme wind that blew through the park. As I said, this state park is located right on the bay, on a very flat land, so it is a frequent experience. Unfortunately, since I pitched the most mediocre and loose tent, it blew around all night and felt like we were going to lift from the ground and it was going to take us with it. I did not get much sleep that night. On the second day, we decided to explore the old lighthouse. It was their spring season, so they had open tours for a few hours during the day. There was a tour guide who gave us the history of the house, and gave some cool facts about it. One thing the guide seemed to breeze right over, though, it stuck with me, was that the man who built the house, along with the next two owners, died very shortly after living in the house. The guide treated that little fact like it was nothing. We continued to hike, drink, smoke, and do all the other camping shenanigans, having a wonderful time. It was time to go to bed, and this is where things truly begin to get strange. This night was not windy at all. In fact, it was dead silent. Not a comforting silence, but an eerie silence that puts you on edge. I eventually got to sleep quickly despite this, considering I barely slept the previous night. Not long after I sunk into a deep sleep, Dee wakes me up, looking concerned. "Babe, did you hear that?" he asked. "No, I was asleep. What happened?" I asked back. He replied, "I heard someone yell, 'Hey,' outside our tent. I think there's a man outside." I did not think much of it at first. I thought it was just the other couple talking to each other since their tent was pretty much right next to ours. But then I heard our friend snoring. They are the loudest snorers I have ever met in my entire life. The other loops could probably hear them from here, which meant they were fast asleep and obviously not talking to each other, or us. Honestly, I was a bit skeptical that Dee even heard anything. We were drinking and smoking all night, so it could have just been paranoia. That is, until I heard the footsteps. They were circling around our tent, the sound of heavy boots making their way along the gravel. The steps had a little clinking sound to them, like one of those old-time steel boots. This was no paranoia. We both looked at each other and thought, who the hell was at our tent, and what did they want? The mesh window of our tent was open, and we could see outside around us. We watched above and around us, following the sound of the footsteps with our eyes, but never actually seeing a person. I got chills until the sound made its way back down the path and eventually disappeared. Dee and I both looked at each other and just said, "What the hell was that?" We left the next day as planned and we told our friends what happened. They were fast asleep and did not hear anything, which is not surprising. Those two could probably sleep through a tornado. This is where the story came together. When I got home, I decided to research the state park. Suddenly, everything made sense. Point Lookout was once a Civil War prisoner camp. Buried all around the park were the bodies of Confederate soldiers. The prison housed prisoners in horrible conditions and was constantly overcrowded. There are stories of torture at the camp and even in the basement of the lighthouse. The ghost sightings are abundant from others, many stating that they have heard or seen people walking and patrolling the area, even questioning some of the park guests. I was convinced that it was what we experienced that night. The sound of heavy boots and the loud "Hey!" seemed to match the other descriptions. There are also stories of people seeing a woman walking along the shore of the beach. She comes up and asks people where her headstone is, and if they can help her find it. Turns out, there was a woman who was buried in a nearby cemetery whose headstone was in fact stolen. It was found in a hotel in Washington, D.C. some 50 years later and was never put back. I can only assume that she is going to walk the shoreline until they put it back if they ever do. Anyway, I really want to go back now that I know the history of that park. For anyone who has been to Point Lookout, have you ever experienced anything strange there? I would love to hear some more stories. Thanks for sharing my story on your show.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thanks for listening to these creepy and downright strange state park and camping horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to hit that like button and drop a comment down below because it helps YouTube push this to more eyes. If you're new to the swamp, why not join us? Be sure to subscribe and turn on notifications so you don't miss a new episode on all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future episode, but don't have... If you have a story that you would like to share in a future episode, be sure to submit them at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. You can also submit them on Reddit at r/thedarkswamp. I'd love to see your story and potentially share it with everyone here in the swamp. If you're on the go, but don't have YouTube Premium, but still want to download and listen to your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories no matter where you are, you can do so absolutely free from Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and just about everywhere else you find your favorite podcast online. Thank you guys so much for supporting the swamp the way you do. If you made it all the way to the end, tonight's code word is park camping. Make a comment with park camping in it, and I will pin the funniest one at the top per usual. Thank you guys so much, and I'll see you soon.
Hey there, True Crime Podcast fans. It's Patrick and Jillian from True Crime Obsessed.
Each week on TCO, we recap a true crime documentary everyone's talking about, and we do it with heart, sass, and just the right amount of humor.
So if you like the kind of podcast where two good friends chat about a case in a thoughtful way that centers the victims, you really got to check us out.
Yeah, we cover the well-known cases that you hear about in the news and the underreported cases that desperately need more attention.
For almost 9 years, we've been one of the most popular true crime podcasts out there.
We have over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, and our brand new YouTube channel has over 50,000 subscribers watching our full-length video episodes too.
So find and subscribe True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.